I'm Amy, your host of Mother Lessons. I'm a postpartum doula supporting women through the transition into motherhood and after through emotional and physical support. Mothers need other mothers, and through this podcast we can connect and support each other. Mother Lessons was inspired by the word matrescence. The word was coined in the 70s by anthropologist Dana Raphael. It is the transition period of becoming a mother. Similar to a child becoming a teenager through adolescence, our hormones go wild, our hair and skin change, we learn a whole new dynamic to our bodies and our relationships around us. This podcast is for mothers and mothers-to-be. It's here to support mothers in this massive transition and identity shift, which can happen over many years. We will explore all things mothering ourselves and our children, because mothering ourselves is the first step. Okay, so I'd like to introduce Kate Harrison from Little Yarrow. Kate is a naturopath, herbalist, and postpartum doula living in New South Wales, Australia. We finished the same training with Julia Jones from Newborn Mothers, and I'm very grateful to be part of a community of postpartum doulas all supporting each other in our growth to support other mothers in their fourth trimester. On top of herbalism and naturopathy, Kate has also studied Ayurveda, Chinese medicine, and nutrition. So I'm really excited to pick her brains today and welcome Kate to the Mother Lessons podcast.
Hi, Amy. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm really happy you're here too. So my first question I ask most guests, the beating heart of this podcast is the subject of matrescence, which is the transition of motherhood. How did you experience the identity shift from maiden to mother?
Well, I guess in today's society, I was quite young when I had my first baby. I was 24, which is not really that young, but I feel like in today's modern world, mothers are, women are having babies later. So I felt like, I'd only just come out of finishing my studies at uni. So I'd gone from being like a student for many, many years to all of a sudden being a mum. And it was quite a bit of a shock to the system. I'm also the oldest in my family out of my siblings and all of my cousins. So I'd never had any experience with seeing babies around. I'd never really even held a baby. I'd never seen a baby be breastfed. And so all of a sudden here I was with a baby in my arms and feeling like I had no idea what I was doing really. So it was, I felt very, very overwhelmed during that time.
And what about becoming the mother? So like did you feel like it took a long, long time to feel that you actually became a mother and felt comfortable in that role? Or
yeah, I think it did. I felt like a lot of it did feel like there was something there that was very natural to me, like just trying to tap into, I didn't really have anyone to like role models to kind of look up to or watch with their babies, because none of my friends had babies either. So I didn't really have anyone in front of me to kind of model off. So I kind of had to just tap into my own intuition and what I felt maybe, to just trying to learn, I guess, through my own experience. And it did take time. And I think that whole first year postpartum was just a huge learning curve, and I don't think I really fully kind of felt comfortable until towards the end of that first year I finally kind of started feeling more confident in my own self and my role and my skills and what I was doing. But it was definitely an interesting journey that first year, just trying to navigate and make that transition.
Yeah, and that's the story of a lot of mums, isn't it? That first year is always, I don't know, just shifting into this new identity. It takes time, doesn't it? It's not like a little click of a button and it just happens.
No.
I'm a mother now.
Yeah.
You have grown pains with it as well. And could you just sort of tell us a little bit about your postpartum? It sounds like you didn't plan a postpartum period after or anything. Did you have a postpartum period with any of your kids? Like the highs and lows, yeah. and what you would do differently if you did have another child? What's your
view? Yeah, first time because I didn't really know anything about pregnancy and babies and everything, I really made an effort to learn so much about, you know, the pregnancy and preparing for birth, and I felt so empowered and confident and all of that, but I just didn't really realize that that was only the beginning. I didn't realize that not only should I be preparing for the birth, which is still a huge event, but I should also be preparing for the postpartum. And so I didn't really, I mean, I read a little bit about breastfeeding and just thought, oh yeah, that sounds like pretty easy, you know, you just pop them on and they feed. And then I realized it actually wasn't that easy. So I had a lot of problems with feeding. You know, as I said, I'd never seen a baby be fed before. So, yeah, that was hard, just learning how to do that. And I think I put a lot of pressure on myself thinking it should be easy. Why is it so hard? Why is it hurting? And I had like an oversupply of milk. So it was kind of, you know, that was, you know, you often hear about mums saying that they struggle because they didn't have enough milk. But often mums can struggle when they have too much because they're just constantly engorged and it hurts. And you know, that can be quite, you know, having to pump excess milk, and it's like, yeah, that kind of side of it, you don't really hear about that as much, but that can be quite stressful for mums as well. You know, my baby was quite colicky and woke frequently, and so I felt really stressed out in those early days. And I did have good support, that's one thing I did have, but yeah, I feel like there was just that lack of knowledge and preparation. So second time, I'd already done Julia's training with what the newborn mothers trained to become a postpartum doula, because I was really fascinated with wanting to learn more about, you know, these traditional practices and learning how I could support other women. But also I was really interested in myself because I wanted to have another baby. So second time around was much different because I was able to do so much preparation. I had so much more understanding. And I think just having a lot more realistic expectation as well was a huge game changer for me. And so that second time around, I still had the same help from my family, but I also actually hired a postpartum doula, and that was really wonderful. So she came and cooked for me once a week and gave me a massage, and just someone to kind of talk to that was a bit more objective, I guess, because when you, I mean, family and your partner are great, but because they're so in the thick of the emotions with you, it's nice to have someone who's a bit more objective to come and see you, and, you know, you can feel like it's a safe environment to talk about how you're feeling. And I felt like that was really helpful, and just, you know, hold the baby while I could have a shower, have a rest. And that was a really big game changer, I think, the second time around. And just, yeah, more realistic expectations, better planning. So I'd planned a lot more around what foods I needed to eat and prioritizing rest, because first time around I was out like at the shops, you know, 2 days after my baby was born, because my baby was bigger than I'd expected. So I thought, oh, I better go and get some bigger size clothes. Let's go to the shopping.
Wow. Oh, wow. That must have been so crazy for your nervous system. How did you feel after that?
I think at the time it was kind of fun, like, oh, take the baby out, you know, like show the baby off because they're so cute and that. But then you get home and you just feel a bit overwhelmed, and yeah, it wasn't a good idea. So second time I knew, do not go to the shops, don't go anywhere. And I felt, yeah, I just felt like I had a better understanding of what my body needed, where first time I didn't really know what I actually needed. I had a lot of anxiety that first time because I just was so overwhelmed, whereas second time I did feel a little bit anxious. There was like moments of that, I think, but I was a bit more aware of more the changes that go on, I think, with the hormones, and when you know it's okay, it's normal, and it, you know, it should pass, just rest and get help and support. And I feel like that was, yeah, a lot more helpful. second time.
Oh, thanks for sharing that polarity between the first and second. So many have that experience where they sort of heal their first birth story and postpartum with their second by changing things. And your website's filled with super practical information and guidance for women either in conceiving, pregnancy and postpartum phase. What herbal practices would you recommend a woman do postpartum for fast recovery? And it's a bit of a big question because I'd love you to cover milk supply, engorgement and anxiety and anything else that you want to cover.
Yeah. So I usually recommend women, so preparing, like kind of getting your remedies ready while you're pregnant, like in that last trimester, it's good to kind of start preparing some remedies. So some of the things that I did for myself and that I recommend is getting like some pads and soaking them in chamomile tea and then freezing them in a Ziploc bag so that you can use it as a nice healing and cooling compress to help with healing after birth. So chamomile is really anti-inflammatory and it's antimicrobial to stop infection. So that's something really just easy and simple women can do, as well as making up like a herbal mixture for a bath soak as well, like a that you could, like a sitz bath that you can soak in. So herbs again, like chamomile is really good. Calendula is really nice and soothing, anti-inflammatory. Lavender is another one that's nice and calming. Even like myrrh powder is another one that can be quite soothing. And tea tree as well, so you could use some tea tree essential oils and make like a nice bath soak just to help with that topical kind of healing. And then you can also use that same mix, like make a tea out of it and then strain it off and pop it in like a bottle and use it like a spray, so when you go, when you go to the toilet once you've had a baby, it can sting a bit sometimes. And so if you have your little spray bottle nearby, at least you can give a little spray after you go to the toilet and just help to cleanse that area and cool it and calm it down and help with healing. So that's more like the topic, like more the physical healing.
I'll just ask about the pads quickly. Would you just put them on and then, because obviously they would unfreeze and go, how long would you sort of keep them on for?
You'd probably pop like a little cloth over the top as well so it doesn't stick to you, because sometimes when things are so cold they can stick to you. So you would just want to make sure that you have a cloth there, just to, because if it's deep, like because you don't want to make them so dripping soaking wet that that's all going to melt. You kind of just want them to be a little bit damp just with the chamomile. I remember they didn't do it after the birth of my second baby, but the first one, I remember they put like icy poles, like they opened up a pad and then stuffed like an icy pole in the pad.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, that's interesting. But they didn't do that second time around, but I was at a different place where I gave birth. But I guess it's just that cooling sensation to help reduce the inflammation. But if you put the herbs in there, that can just give that extra added healing benefit. That's more like the topical kind of healing. For milk supply, fennel and fenugreek and nettle are all really good for milk supply. And they're also, the good thing about those herbs is that they're good for digestion. So those herbs pass through your milk to your baby and can help to settle bub's belly as well if they're a little bit colicky. So it's not only good for the mum's milk but also for calming your baby's tummy too.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, and you could also use herbs in cooking as well.
Yeah, exactly. Put it in your cooking and soups and stews, like all those real aromatic digestive, like the fennel and caraway and cinnamons and ginger. They're also nice at calming the digestion and good for like the milk supply. Nettle is really rich in iron, so it's really good postpartum as well, especially if you've had a lot of blood loss. It's just helping to restore and nurture your blood as well.
I have a question about that later.
Lemon balm is a really nice one, more for mood support, that you can drink as a tea. So now, mums often get like the 3-day postpartum, the baby blues. They start to feel a bit emotional. Lemon balm's really lovely at It's like an antidepressant herb, but it's also anti-anxiety and calming, and it's very nourishing and supportive. So having lemon balm is a really nice herbal tea that you could take as well, just to support your nervous system as a new mum.
That's so nice.
So, and then do you have
any tips for, and you just spoke about engorgement. I was also really engorged, and it's so painful and uncomfortable. What would you suggest for that?
Not so much herbs for that. I mean, if you, if the engorgement doesn't, if it continues, then obviously you can get that blockage and then you get mastitis. So echinacea is really good if you have mastitis, because it helps with fighting the infection, and it's safe with breastfeeding, so you can take echinacea. But in terms of just that general engorgement, it sounds a bit strange, but a potato poultice is actually really good.
Wow,
so you can grate a raw potato and then pop it like in some muslin and then just press it on the breasts, and it actually helps to just calm any that, you know, when you're engorged, it's like this angry, hot kind of hard rock. It's just so nasty. Yeah. And the potato poultice actually helps to calm that whole area and soothe it and reduce the inflammation. And then once the potato starts to warm up and it gets hot, then just change it, like take it out and pop some fresh cold potato in. It's a bit of a strange remedy, but it certainly just helps just to calm down. And then if you're feeling quite hot, and you know when you're engorged you can feel like quite hot as well, so things like drinking elder tea, like elder blossom tea, can be really nice, as well as just bringing down if there's any kind of fever or you're just feeling a bit hot. So that's a nice one that you can take as well.
Nice. Yeah. The potato thing's not so weird for me, because my mum's Polish, and whenever any of us would get a temperature, she would slice really thinly sliced potatoes, really cold potatoes, all over our body and mainly our feet, and then they'd become brown. And then it worked, and it was so soothing. I remember that as a kid, and the smell, I just remember it so much.
It's amazing, isn't it? The most simple little thing can make such a big difference.
Definitely. So it's so good for mothers to get together and share all these old wives' tales. It's so much better than that. I recently read your newsletter with Herbs for Brain Fog. Can you tell us why new mothers may feel that they are living in a bit of a cloud, and what herbs could support them?
Yeah, so that's the effect of the oxytocin. So having the oxytocin, people usually think, oh, that brain fog or baby brain, you kind of make jokes like it's a bad thing, but in those early days, it actually does have a useful function, and that's to help us just to bond with our baby without distraction. And I guess it's like a survival mechanism too, you know, that, you know, our babies need our full attention. They can't have us being distracted by other tasks and different things. So I guess it's nature's way of helping us to focus solely on our baby. And so we have that brain fog, but often women do find that once they kind of come out of that real newborn haze, that they can still feel quite foggy, and it might not be so practical to feel like that way anymore when your baby's a bit older. So often stress can mess around with your hormones, and if you're just feeling really tired and chronic sleep deprivation, then that can prolong that brain fog feeling. So some really great herbs for brain fog are rosemary. So rosemary, they've actually done interesting studies that show that even simply burning rosemary essential oils for students who were in exams, they actually got better test results than the people that didn't have the rosemary burning. So that's quite fascinating. Essential oil, and also taking, you know, eating rosemary or taking rosemary extract can help with brain fog. Other herbs like ginkgo is another one. And even the ginkgo flower actually almost looks like a bit of a brain as well. So Ginkgo's good. Ginseng is another one. Ginseng's quite good for brain function. There's Ayurvedic herb called Bacopa or Brahmi is the other name for it, and that's quite good. It's funny, I started taking some today because I've been feeling my baby's two, but he still wakes a lot, so I've been feeling a bit foggy lately, so I've started taking it, and I actually just even like a couple of days, and I notice it's interesting, you know, when you're used to just feeling so foggy and you're just, it's hard to concentrate and focus, and then when it starts to lift, it's like the clouds are kind of peeling back, and all of a sudden you feel so much more sharper and more clarity. So those herbs are really great for mums that are just struggling to get out of that initial kind of brain fog beyond when it's actually not really helpful anymore.
Yeah. Oh, that's so helpful. Most people just go to coffee, right? But coffee just makes my hormones go wild and my anxiety come up. So I had to stop coffee. And yeah, I haven't heard of the Ayurvedic one, so I'll definitely try that. And what are some essential things that we need to do to balance out our hormones postpartum? And when do we start that process?
Yeah. Well, the biggest one is just stress. Like stress really, it blocks serotonin. So if you're stressed, you're going to be producing less serotonin, which can predispose you to feeling, to postnatal depression. Stress can also inhibit GABA, which is our anti-anxiety neurotransmitter as well. And so that's why it comes back to that basic postpartum care of trying to minimize stress by getting the support you need, getting the help you need, resting, because doing all those things will help to lower our stress hormones, because if they're up, and I mean, some mums, they might have great care, but if they've had quite a traumatic birth, they're naturally going to have higher stress hormones. So I think just that basic minimizing stress is really important. And then herbs as well to help with just supporting your nervous system as well. Like I mentioned, the lemon balm is really nice. Things like chamomile, passion flower, they're really nice, calming, soothing herbs. There's a good herb, another Ayurvedic one actually. It's called shatavari, which you may have heard of, and it's good for milk production, but it's also really good for balancing females' hormones. And it's also an adaptogen, so it's good for increasing your resistance to stress. So it's kind of the perfect herb, really, for new mums, because it has that triple effect of supporting the milk supply, balancing the hormones, reducing stress. So that's a really nice one that women...
If you're engorged, would you avoid a herb like that?
Not necessarily, because usually the engorgement can be... It's not really like a long... lasting thing, because I say usually when you give birth, your body makes, not in everyone, but it can make enough for twins, just in case you got twins. And so it can take a little while for your body just to realize, okay, don't have twins, I don't need to be making this much milk, and it kind of settles down and adjusts, because it's the whole supply and demand. So how much your baby feeds is how much your body will make, but it can take a couple of weeks, even longer really, it can take a month just for your body to kind of work that out. So yeah, I probably wouldn't take shatavari while your body's trying to figure out how much milk it needs, but once your milk supply settles down and you get into that rhythm of knowing, you know, you're not feeling engorged anymore, then you could take shatavari.
Oh, that sounds amazing. And most of us have heard about drinking raspberry leaf tea, like in the end of our pregnancy. Can you explain why? And can you add any more practices using herbs that we can adopt that are less well known, sort of just before? Would you drink raspberry leaf tea just after as well to sort of help tone the...
Yeah. So there's a lot of misconceptions about raspberry leaf. I get so many messages from people saying, oh, I'm scared to take it because what if, it brings on the baby too early? But it actually, that's not its function. Its function is that it's a uterine tonic. So, you know, your uterus is a muscle, and so it actually strengthens the muscle so that when it is time to have your baby, your uterus is actually having like strong, efficient contractions that are actually bringing your baby down. Because some women can have like very long, prolonged labor because their uterus is contracting, but it's quite spasmodic and irregular, and they're not very effective contractions, and then it stalls, and that's when you end up with all kinds of problems. So the raspberry leaf kind of, it's like training, you know, doing your pre-training and helping the muscle get strong so that when it's actually time to go, it does the job well. So taking it usually, so from the second trimester onwards, so you could have one cup a day in the second trimester and then pop it up to two cups in the third trimester. It doesn't reduce the length of the first stage of labor, but studies do show that it reduces the second stage, so the pushing phase.
Right.
I can't remember how long. There are studies that actually tell you like how long it can shorten it by. I feel like it's 20 minutes. Like on average, it can reduce the pushing phase, just because it's just the contractions are so much more effective. So you, obviously you're going to be pushing your baby out in a shorter amount of time. And then postpartum as well, it can help with reducing postpartum hemorrhage because you want your uterus to contract back down effectively and quickly to stop any bleeding. And if you have a uterus that's a bit weak and sluggish, then it's just not going to contract back down very quickly, and that's where you can have the blood loss. So it's good postpartum for preventing excess bleeding and helping your uterus just to contract back down, and helping with after pains as well. So, you know, with each baby you get more intense afterbirth pain, so the raspberry leaf can kind of help with that.
Nice. I love the taste of raspberry leaf tea as well. I drink it now. you touched on blood building foods and herbs, and I read your blog. You've got so many good blog posts, so go check out Kate's blog and sign up to her newsletter as well. Could you summarize how a mother or woman would know if she's blood deficient and what she can do to support herself?
So the most common signs of blood deficiency would be things like fatigue, so feeling very tired, lightheaded, dizzy, maybe a little bit of like heart palpitations as well, or just being more aware that you might be a bit like irregular heartbeat or shortness of breath, quite pale as well, can be another sign. So yeah, but you know, the average women lose on average between 1 cup to a litre of blood at birth with normal blood loss, and then, you know, postpartum hemorrhage is quite common really, so women can lose a lot more. So you think and then you're bleeding as well after, you know, you've got the 6 weeks where it's almost like you've got a period for 4 to 6 weeks, and then many women can often get their period back quite soon as well. So it's a lot of blood loss that you lose really in that first you know, the first 6 to 12 months. So a lot of women do end up quite blood deficient after birth.
And what could they do to support themselves with that? What kind of herbs or tonics or foods could they use?
So lots of like dried fruits are quite good blood building foods. So things like dried apricots, dried plums, or otherwise known as prunes. Cherries are quite good. Things like your leafy green vegetables, so like spinach and broccoli, are good blood building foods. Nettles are really good as well. So, I mean, nettles are a bit bitter if you eat them. Like, you can eat them, but it's probably better to have it in a tea.
Yeah.
Or you can take it like in a liquid extract, but nettles are really good for blood building foods. And then you got like your lentils and your beans, those kind of foods. Beetroot as well, actually. Beetroot is quite a really good blood building food as well.
It looks like it should be.
I
just love the color of it. And the nettle infusion, I've been doing nettle infusion for a few years, and it's just, actually I started doing it after I gave birth to my baby. I went to like a little yurt gathering for mothers, and the doula there said, just go into my garden and pick all the nettles and then pop it into a glass jar and then overnight just steep it and then drink it in the next day. And it's just this beautiful dark green, like almost black tonic that's just, it just feels like, I just felt like I was kind of having a natural coffee or something. It was just filling me up somehow. I just love drinking nettle infusion.
This, and it's such an easy, like it's such an easily absorbed iron as well, like because it's a plant-based iron and it's got all of the other nutrients in there as well. You know, it's rich in so many other nutrients that help with the absorption. It's just such a lovely way to help with, you know, building back your blood and tonifying you after birth. Yeah,
and depends where you are, but I mean, most places in Europe is just abundant at this time of year, and it's just
it's kind of like a weed, so it kind of just grows quite freely
everywhere. Amazing. What can any herbs sort of cause imbalances? And do you recommend any cautions and herbs women could, that women should avoid when conceiving, pregnant, or in the early days of postpartum? I know that some sort of Chinese herbs are super strong, and I've heard some stories of causing imbalances. So I just wondered what's your perspective on that?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people think that, you know, because herbs are natural, that they're safe and you can take any herbs in pregnancy and postpartum. But it's, you really have to be careful because, especially in pregnancy, like, I just don't really recommend taking any herbs in pregnancy other than like ginger if you're nauseous, or, you know, raspberry leaf to prepare for labor, because there's just a lack of research. I mean, it's unethical to test on pregnant women. That's why there's a lack of research. But you want to especially avoid ones that have hormonal actions in pregnancy. And a lot of herbs as well have quite strong volatile oils that you want to avoid, you know, like very strong detoxifying actions, like that drawing down action that could bring on a miscarry, or, you know, the volatile oils that could cause birth defects. You really, really have to be careful. So I usually just say try and avoid herbs in pregnancy. The main ones that have been actually studied and shown to be safe is ginger, chamomile, cranberry, which is good for UTIs in pregnancy, echinacea is safe in pregnancy, so that's good if you've got a cold or flu, and then raspberry leaf. So they've all been studied and they are safe, but yeah, I wouldn't really be playing around with other herbs. And then postpartum, once again, you've got to be careful if you're breastfeeding, because herbs pass through the milk. So you don't want to be having herbs that have like too much like strong detoxifying actions, because you don't want to be purging all of your toxins into your baby. So you've got to be really careful with that. And then ones with very strong hormonal actions as well, you need to be careful. And sage is another one which actually dries up breast milk. So you don't want to be having any sage while you're breastfeeding. So breastfeeding, there are a lot more herbs that are safe, especially all of your culinary kind of herbs. They're all fine. And a lot of the nervous system supporting herbs, they're all generally fine. So
which ones do you definitely not to, apart from sage, after postpartum?
Probably ones. So like there's Dong Quai or Angelica, which is like quite a strong, it's a well-known Chinese medicine hormonal kind of herb. I'd probably avoid that. And then you got like your wormwood and tansy and all those more like anti kind of parasitic, like they're very just rich in volatile oils. If you've ever smelled any of those like anti-parasitic kind of antimicrobial herbs, they're like so strong and potent. They're just a bit too strong and they just pass through the milk. I would avoid them. And then even like a lot of laxative kind of herbs that you know, like cascara and stuff like that, they're just a bit too intense to be taking while you're pregnant or breastfeeding. So I just stick to more like your basic kind of like your chamomiles and gingers and lemon balms, things like the shatavari or withania or ashwagandha is the other name, is another Indian herb, which is nice and supportive and tonifying, that's fine. And your nettles. I'm just trying to think what else. Most of them are fine. It's more just the ones that have that really strong detoxifying or hormonal kind of action, you just got to be careful with. So if ever in doubt, just ask a herbalist or a naturopath and just double check, because it's better to be on the safe side.
Yeah, definitely. Is there anything else that you would want to sort of mention about herbs before I ask you just a couple of questions about postpartum?
I think the herbs are just so great for women postpartum, just supporting, helping with their energy and their mood. And I think that, as you said, you know, a lot of women rely on coffee, caffeine, just to get through the day. And, it's just a bit of a band-aid. It's not really helping them to restore any lost nutrients or support their adrenals. It's just this quick kind of fix that's not actually really helping, whereas herbs can really get to the root kind of cause and the imbalance and really help to kind of support you in a much more kind of positive way that is actually going to be more productive long term.
Yeah, you're nourishing yourself, like having a varied diet in a way, isn't it? Like with nettle, with herbal infusions in general, would you say that you can overdo it? Because at one point I was drinking nettle infusion, placed my water basically.
I wouldn't go I think probably any more than 2 cups of a particular herb a day. You probably don't want to be having more than, 2 cups of a particular herb a day, because you can have a bit too much sometimes, even of a good thing.
Yeah, of course. Okay, well, that's fascinating. And I just, I love all things herbs, and I sort of dream about having a little garden with all the different herbs. Do you have a garden?
I do, actually. We've just moved house, so we've just had to reestablish it. We've just started digging it all up again. But yeah, it's nice to have. We've actually planted some calendula in the garden, so that's a nice one. They're really nice bright orange petals.
Steaming that calendula, very soothing.
It's a really nice one.
I wanted to ask you just a bit, just 2 questions about postpartum and your journey into being a doula. Why did you decide to be a postpartum doula? So you're already a herbalist, you're already a naturopathist. Would you say it naturopath. Why did you decide then to add in postpartum doula?
Well, when I was, so as a naturopath, I was actually working at a midwifery clinic in Melbourne in Australia, and I was just around mums all the time. I was mainly working with supporting pregnant women, and then they would become, they'd have their baby and I would support them postpartum. But I felt like there was kind of like a piece of the puzzle missing. I felt like I had to learn. I knew how to support them with herbs and diet and nutrition, but I felt like more that traditional kind of cultural postpartum care, I didn't really know that much about it. And I felt like I just really wanted to get a better understanding. And just because, going through postpartum myself, and I just felt like there's such this big gap in our culture of care. And I just felt like I needed to know more and I needed to help women. And when I saw, I'd been following Julia for quite some time, and when I saw her training, just straight away, like I kind of didn't even really think very long about it. I was like, oh, I have to do that. I just felt so pulled, and I was just so glad that I did it, because it really was that missing piece of what I needed to know, not only for, for my work as a healer and helping women, but for myself as well. I felt like I just have so much better understanding now of what women and mothers need in that postpartum period.
Yeah, it's an incredible training. Would you be able to go through what sort of a little bit of a day in the life of you as a postpartum doula and what you do to support women? So if they booked you for a day, Or if they booked you for a whole postpartum period, but what would you sort of typically do in a day? Just so people can understand, because a lot of people still don't understand what postpartum doulas do and why would they hire them?
Yeah. So I work a little bit differently because I'm 100% online at the moment. So I'm not currently doing any in-person visits, which probably will change in the future because I've still got my children are quite young. So when they're older, I would like to do more in person. But currently at the moment, I was running in-person workshops for postpartum preparation. Now I'm doing more online postpartum prep workshops. And I also do one-on-one sessions online for postpartum planning and postpartum support as well. So I help mothers to create a plan for their postpartum, and we go through, all the practical things that they can organise, and I teach them about how to organise and prepare herbal remedies and stock their pantry and ideas for building that support network. I send them out herbs as well. We talk about supplements and nutrition that they can take. We talk about the traditional practices as well, so things like belly binding, and I teach them how to do that and how that can help. And a lot of it's education, really, about what to expect and helping them feel prepared. And then more the postpartum support would focus more around helping with breastfeeding and troubleshooting any issues if there's like low milk supply or over milk supply or any pain or mastitis. I help with that. If there's any anxiety or low mood or stress, then I help them navigate that. And I'll also post them out herbs and remedies and supplements and things like that. And I offer a lot of email support in between sessions as well, just so they feel like they have that constant, just that consistency of having someone there to support them and to talk to them when they need it. I also have an ebook, Botanical Medicine for New Mothers, as well. So that's something that I always give to my clients as well, because it's got that so much information in there about how you can prepare for the postpartum period and how you can really utilize herbal and nutritional medicine as well to support yourself during that time.
Amazing. Yeah. I want to get that book so people can get that on your website. Amazing.
So it's littleyarrow.com and then /ebook.
Amazing. And have you got a free resource as well that you give out, or was that an old?
I do. It's a postpartum healing toolkit, so it's a little toolkit about what you can do to prepare. So it's all about preparing. So how ideas for stocking your pantry and foods and herbs and different remedies as well for supporting yourself postpartum. So you can get that on my website as well.
Amazing. Yeah, just hearing what kind of support you give women and just hearing any postpartum doula talking about the kind of support that women get just, I don't know, heals something in me from my first birth, because I did get support from my mother and my partner, but the idea of having someone coming, cooking, massaging, supporting, just talking and processing. I think the talking bit is also so important. I remember getting just two visits from a health visitor, and it really wasn't useful in any way, but I just really enjoyed someone coming and asking me questions and just seeing if I was okay. And so I think it's just so important that mothers get that sort of outside support. And I know some countries like Germany and some countries in Scandinavia get really good postpartum support. In Holland, they get 6 weeks of a midwife coming every single day.
And that would be amazing.
I know. And in England, I think I got a lot of support when I was in hospital. And then when I was out, I just had that 1 week and then another week with a health visitor. And it was really only weighing my baby and telling me if I've fed enough, you know. It's just so important that we get this message out that there is more support. And postpartum, there's so many postpartum doulas now that are offering online and in person. And it just, I just want it to become the new normal, because so many people focus on the pregnancy and the birth, and then it's just this empty void of being alone with your baby and just navigating motherhood and then the father's navigating fatherhood, and then you're navigating the dynamics between the two of you. So yeah. I'm so happy to talk to you about these things.
Thank you for having me. It's really I agree. I think we need a lot more mother-centered care.
Yeah, for sure. And I just want to ask you two more questions that I ask all my guests. What three books would you recommend a mother read? So either when she's pregnant or after?
Yeah. I really love, and I've forgotten what the author is, but it's The First 40 Days. I'm not sure if you've read that one.
Oh, wow.
But I really love that book just because it really paints that picture of that traditional, all the traditional postpartum practices that are so common in, you know, you look at like in China and in Indonesia and Malaysia and the, you know, the Middle East, and they just have these common threads of this, like such basic global principles, but they're, I just love reading about that. And that book is really great, and it's got so many wonderful recipes in it as well. So I love that book. And the Nourishing Newborn Mothers by Julia Jones as well. Yeah. That was probably the first book I think I ever read about postpartum care, and that's really great for helping you understand what mothers, how that role of that nourishing foods, and how it's just so important because, before I read that book, all I really knew about postpartum diet, I guess, was hearing about women trying to lose their baby weight and having salads and raw foods, and you know, that's all I'd ever really heard. But when I read Julia's book, I thought, wow, that's just so far from what they should be doing, and it's really quite damaging having that mentality that you need to be dieting and having all of these cold raw foods when our bodies are actually really craving that warmth and the digestive support and the nourishment. And so that, I think that is a really great book just to help you understand what your body is actually needing for healing and recovery.
Amazing.
Yeah. And then a third book, I'm just trying to think, probably The Fourth Trimester is another really good one as well. I really like that one by Kimberly Johnson, the author. Yeah, I really like that one as well.
You've been the third guest that has said her book. She's amazing.
Yeah.
She's got an amazing podcast, and she's great on her Instagram and IGTV as well.
Yeah, I think they're my three favorites.
Nice. Yeah, they're goodies. One more question. What would you say to your newborn mother self now with the experience you have now?
I think don't compare yourself to others. I know that was something that I did a lot in those early days, is comparing how I was coping, how my baby was sleeping or not sleeping, or just always, you know, although that mother seems like she's got it so much easier, or she seems so much more like coping better, or, you know, just always that comparing, and you think you don't know what's going on underneath or at home with other mums. And, you know, sometimes they seem like they've got it all together, but they're actually really struggling. And I think that you just need to, you know, just do what you can and support, try and get as much help as you need. And yeah, just don't compare yourself to other mothers, because you're the only mother for your baby, and you have that unique relationship that no one else has. And we're all got our own unique experience and challenges in motherhood. And I think just be easy and on yourself, be gentle and kind to yourself, and, you know that you're doing the best that you can, and don't be afraid to ask for help.
All those words should just be on a meditation, and you should just have them as a mantra when you're pregnant in your third trimester. Thank you so much for all your answers and all your wisdom and your insights. It was really lovely having you on, and it was so nice meeting you on Zoom.
Yeah, thank you so much, Amy. I'm really honored to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, have a lovely evening.
Thank you.
Bye.
You too.
That was such a super informative and filled with so many tips podcast. Thank you, Kate, for joining us. It has so many tips and it'll keep you busy with plenty of ideas to stock up and get prepared for after your baby is born. I read the first 40 days in my third trimester, and that book is what sparked a passion for the work that I do right now. I had every intention to rest for the first 40 days and nourish myself, but when it came down to it, I was so tired, even thinking about putting the herbs together for a soak was overwhelming. So preparing the herbs and salts and sprays and food and everything else when you're not sleep deprived is so key. These are also the things that postpartum doulas do for you with their knowledge of the postpartum period and foods and herbs and massage and birth story listening and so much more. I'm so passionate about making postpartum care the norm and not a luxury. Most mothers do not think twice about spending thousands on all the things that they think they need. And in reality, all the baby needs is her mother. And so by investing in mothers, we are investing in the future generations. Thank you, Kate, for providing so much amazing information. Follow Kate on Instagram. She's Little Yarrow. And her website is www.littleyarrow.com. Please share this podcast with mothers and mothers-to-be in your life. And I also appreciate and love hearing from you on my Instagram or email. So much love.